This is Jim Inkster, and you are listening to Talk Louisiana. Signature support from the Mayor's Office in East Baton Rouge Parish, Mayor President's Office, and the show originates from Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. And we're visiting with His Honor, the interim mayor of St. George, Dustin Yates, a firefighter who grew up in the great city of New Orleans, graduate of Jesuit High School, and ironically came to Baton Rouge on August 1st, 2005, 4 weeks to the date before Katrina. And then after Katrina, he decided to stay. And now he's mayor of St. George, and he is a firefighter. And good morning to you, Dustin Yates, graduate of Jesuit and the University of New Orleans. Pleasure to have you on the show.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me here today.
And your number is 877-217-5757. And talk at talklouisiana.org for emails. Well, Governor Landry made this appointment. Were you vying for it?
I knew that my name was put in the hat for the, you know, the nomination for the process. But other than that, I was not involved in the process whatsoever. I didn't talk to the governor. I didn't really talk to anybody regarding it, to be quite honest with you. And then the day before everybody found out, I received a phone call and said that Governor Landry would like to appoint me to this position.
Well, Jennifer Marsh, one of our crack investigative reporters, says you're doing this at no pay, right?
That's correct.
You're a volunteer.
I'm a volunteer.
Who wants that kind of gig?
I don't know. My wife questions it all the time. If I volunteer for anything else, I don't know if I'd be able to go home.
Well, were you involved on the ground floor of St. George? Were you there at the beginning, at the genesis of this?
I was. So the movement really started with a school movement, and that was kind of prior to my involvement. Prior to me being a firefighter, I was a public school teacher and a football coach. So my last post for that was at Woodlawn High School here in Baton Rouge. And while I was there, there was another gentleman that was volunteering his time as a freshman coach, and his name was Norman Browning. So
you're both involved.
That's correct. So I got to know Norman then. And then when I left there and entered the fire service, we kind of lost touch a little bit. And you know, 6-7 years later, my wife and I are sitting there watching the nightly news, and there I see Norman on TV vying for a new school system in Southeast Baton Rouge. So at that point in time, they had had some trouble with the legislature trying to get the new school system passed, and they were told repeatedly that, you know, if you want this to happen, you have to go form a city. So we kind of mutually connected in the spring of 2013, and that's when my involvement began.
Dustin Yates is the name, 877-217-5757. Some of us remember Rowdy Yates from Rawhide, Clint
Rowdy
Eastwood.
Yates, Clint Eastwood,
yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, so this guy was a football coach at East St. John, one of the great football powers in South Louisiana, and now he's mayor of St. George and a firefighter by training. And that's yesterday we had Speaker Mike Johnson on this show, and his dad was a firefighter who was severely injured on the job, and you take chances, and thanks for your service, but now you're doing this pro bono. Do you want to keep the job when it becomes the full-time gig?
Jim, to be 100% honest with you, I'll give you the same answer I give everybody else. I'm 100% focused on this interim role, what the future holds. I can't tell you. In order for me to really be able to adequately do this job, I have to stay kind of with blinders on a little bit and stay focused on the job at hand. And currently the job at hand that I've been appointed to do is to stand up the city government. What happens after that, you know, I really can't speak to.
Were you surprised at all at the Supreme Court decision? It was a 4-3 decision, and lower court rulings went the other way, and you won the big show at the High Court on Royal Street in New Orleans. You're smiling. Were you surprised at the decision?
Well, you know, I've been in a courtroom 3 times in my life, Jim. The first time was in the district court case for the city of St. George. I was actually sequestered because I was one of the people giving testimony there. So I only saw a small bit of that. And then the second time I went to court was the appellate court hearing for the city of St. George. And the third time I went was for, you know, the Supreme Court hearing for the city of St. George. So by no means am I a legal expert. I'm not an attorney. But I think ultimately I was never really surprised. I always thought that we would get here eventually. I thought eventually that we would end up in a courtroom where they decided that the will of the voter, the will of the people in this area to determine their own future, determine their own form of government, would ultimately prevail.
Again, 877-217-5757 and emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. And a listener notes something that Dustin and I talked about a few moments ago, and that's that he's the product of the same high school that produced one Patz Greene, former mayor of Baton Rouge, 1981 to 1989, elected in November of 1980. And he was a liberal Democrat. I gather you're not.
I consider myself a conservative.
Yeah. And most people, at least most white people in Louisiana are, and you fit the mold of St. George. Now, there are those, and you know it, who believe this was formed by people who wanted to get away from black folks. Is that too simplistic, or is there something to that?
Well, all I can speak to is my own history and my own involvement with this effort from the very beginning. That was never anything that was certainly ever discussed. That wasn't the intent of anything that we've done. For me personally, you know, and I've said this before in the past, that to go back to some of my history is that, you know, I was a public school teacher for 4 years, and I had options to be a private school teacher, but I didn't. I chose the public school route because that's where I wanted to be, and those are the people that I wanted to serve. And then I got into the fire department, and the fire department, there is, you know, there is no color in the fire department. We don't stop at the door and make sure who's behind that door before we go into a building in order to perform an emergency service. So I've never looked at it in that lens. I've always thought that was something that was brought up through the past 10 or 12 years to create division, to create controversy. Mm-hmm. But that was never the intent, and nor will it ever be the intent of the city of St. George.
All right, a couple of listeners have opined online, and again, 877-217-5757. Another notes that you're offensive line coach at East St. John.
I was.
Yeah. You probably encountered people of color as coach of East St. John, I would imagine.
That's correct. When I was at East St. John, the majority of my students and the majority of my players that I coached were African American.
Was it a good school?
I loved my time at East St. John. I absolutely loved the people that I was around at East St. John. I had some wonderful experiences with kids. You know, when you're a teacher and when you're a coach, the most important thing for them to understand about you is that you love them. And if they really believe that you love them, then they'll perform for you. And I really did love them. These are kids that I would bring home from school. These are kids that I would bring to job interviews. Mm-hmm. I used to spend my free time during my lunch periods, actually, because at East St. John, we had wonderful athletes. We had kids that went to college all over this country on athletic scholarships. And I would spend my lunchtime and my break times and my off periods generally with the juniors and seniors doing ACT prep classes with those kids. And, you know, built a lot of great relationships. Some of them still reach out to me today via Facebook or other means.
But as you know, and you alluded to it earlier, the schools were primarily the reason for the genesis of St. George. What can the new entity, the city of St. George, do that the parish of East Baton Rouge could not, in your estimation, as far as schools?
As far as schools? Well, my standard response so far with this has been that currently in the role that I'm in, the governor didn't appoint me to start a school system. The governor appointed me to stand up a city government. You know, that being said, education was a huge, huge component of why this began. We have said from the very beginning that we always thought that keeping kids in the neighborhoods where they live, smaller system, less bureaucracy, can provide a better educational experience to children. And really all you have to do is look at independent school districts, not only in this state, but all over the country, and there's plenty of models of success.
You're a well-spoken man. Did you know Governor Landry when he tapped you?
I did not. I've never met Governor Landry up to this point.
Somebody must have put in a good word for Dustin Yates. But you could run for mayor of East Baton Rouge Parish. You could. Now you're the mayor of the fifth largest city in the state. Is there any talk of that? The Republicans are looking for a candidate.
Not to my knowledge, and like I told you before, I'm very committed to fulfilling this interim role, and what the future holds, I couldn't tell you.
Jim on I-12. Jim, good morning. You're on with Dustin Yates.
Good morning, gentlemen. Question, what is the city of St. George going to be doing in regards to affordable housing?
What about affordable housing in St. George?
Affordable housing? I'll be honest with you, that's a fairly large topic to mm-hmm. kind of tackle. I'm sure that's something that future...
Well, you came here in part to Baton Rouge, didn't you? You were living in an apartment down the street from where we are right now, if I remember right.
That's correct. I'm sure that's something that the future city and the future mayor and the future council will look into greatly. As of right now, for the next 6, 9, 12 months, that's just not going to be really in my purview of responsibilities
right.
and task.
We'll take an 89.3-second break and be back with Dustin Yates. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Mayor Dustin Yates of St. George, Louisiana, town with around 86,000 citizens, and he is a young man. He's 44, born 12/29/79. So you got how many days in the 70s?
3 days, Jim. 3 days.
3 days. So you didn't get into disco that much.
Not that I'm aware of. I don't know what my parents were doing with me in the hospital, but...
But he's a dynamic fellow, and he's got a big task. And if you would like to engage him in our remaining segment, 877-217-5757. Fairley in Mid-City says, when are the real elections going to be held in St. George?
Sure, that's a great question. I get it all the time. What I've been told is that the earliest it would be potentially a spring election, but it really is dependent on how long the transition takes. Moving from the city parish into the city of St. George. So I've told everybody my best guess, and it's purely speculative, is 12 to 18 months.
Now the mayor, the incumbent, Sharon Weston Broom, and her principal challenger, Ted James, they both oppose St. George. And it appears that one of them is likely to be the mayor the next 4 years. Do you think you can work with them?
Sure. I've always felt that I could work with anybody, and I've been asked a lot about that upcoming election and some other specific questions. And all I can say is that whoever is there, all I can hope for is that they work alongside us for a smooth transition. Because at the end of the day, they're not just the mayor of Baton Rouge; they're the president of the parish, and we're in the parish. So, and that's always been our stance from the very beginning.
Another listener, Mayor Yates, asked about the areas that were annexed out of St. George. A lot of businesses opted to take a hike, and that could affect the tax base. There is a challenge to what they did, but I don't know how successful that challenge will be. And there's still a challenge on the formation of St. George. Chances are those will not succeed, but you never know. But what about the tax base? Do you have the resources needed to fulfill the duties of a city hall and a parish or a city government?
Sure, we do. I just wanted to touch on that real quick, Jim, because there's always been a big misconception about, the amount of money that we said we were going to bring in, and you can't run a city on $45 million or $48 million or $50 million. Well, The thing about it is that the unique nature of our city parish government and all the independent taxing districts that we have here, the sales tax revenue we bring in is just a small amount of what overall the city of St. George produces in property taxes. So you have to understand that in a traditional municipal budget, your three biggest drains are always going to be police, fire, and public works. Well, we already have the sheriff's office. They're already providing service. Likely we'll support them a little bit further to get some things that, some extra things that we'd like to see. We already have a fire department within the city of St. George. So all in all, the residents of the city of St. George put in about $170 million in tax dollars every year. And if you look at it on a per capita basis, that puts us somewhere north of the Highlands, mm-hmm. outside of Houston, which is a popular place that people like to make reference to. So when you're talking about the sales tax revenue, you're really just talking about a small part of what is actually brought in property taxes in order to run a government.
And the 86,000 citizens, are they coming all from unincorporated areas?
Yes, sir. That's the only way that it could work. So by law, we're not allowed to incorporate an area that is already incorporated.
Unless somebody wanted out and voted on it and all that. But,
sure.
But yeah, and I misspoke earlier because the size of the parish stays the same. I had that right. But the size of Baton Rouge stays the same, too. The city will retain its 220,000 citizens. But St. George has 86,000. So we're talking now a city that is 40% the size of Baton Rouge. And it's a big job. And you're a firefighter, and God bless you for putting your life, your health on the line. But do you have the knowledge you feel necessary to do this job?
Sure. That's a great question. I'm glad you asked it, really. So I work for the fire department, and I started out as a firefighter, just like anybody else that starts in a fire service. Over the last 10 years, I have worked administratively. So in the St. George Fire Protection District, we were one of those independent taxing districts. And over that 10-year period, I have been involved in helping manage a $35 million budget, payroll, logistics, emergency management, hazard mitigation, all these different things that I feel like has really prepared me. On top of that, I've had the opportunity to understudy really under our fire chief, who is one of the all-time greats. He's been the fire chief of St. George for 37 years now. He's been there for 50. And there's no more knowledgeable of a man in this parish on how things work in the city parish and government. And it's been a true blessing to be able to work under somebody with his commitment and dedication to public service. So, yes, to answer your question, Jim, is yes. I feel like God has put people in my life and allowed me to prepare myself for this moment now.
Well, there's still some a misconception, and I have an email here saying Sharon Weston Room is still head of what is now St. George. Well, yes, she is mayor president of East Baton Rouge Parish, but these other entities, they have mayors too.
That's correct.
Baker and Central and Zachary, they have mayors, and now St. George has a mayor and the gentleman we're speaking with. The budget's been pegged at $35 million. Is that a good number? Is that an accurate one?
I believe it's a little bit north of that, but I can't speak to that 100%. I don't have it sitting in front of me right now.
All right. A message from Mrs. H.B. Willis saying many people who are now in this new city voted against its creation because it would tie their property taxes. Conservatives as a rule are against taxes and tax increases. As a conservative, how does the new mayor justify supporting something that Mrs. H.B. Willis says will increase taxes?
So we've campaigned on this. People voted on this, all those different deals. And we have never, not one time ever said that we think that there has to be an increase in taxes in order to provide these services. There's no intention to increase taxes. We believe in the same tenets as you believe, Ms. Willis, and we have no intention on doing anything like that.
And Bill Huey says, it seems odd that, to me that St. George residents get to vote in the upcoming mayor's race because it's mayor president of the entire parish, but the entire parish didn't get to vote on the formation of St. George. Does he have a point?
Yeah, great question on that too. So, all I can tell you about that is that's the law. So, you know, that's a revised statute and law involving corporations. We didn't write it. We didn't change it. We didn't do anything with it. It's said in the law when we started that only the residents in the affected area would be able to vote on it. Now, to his point about the residents of the city of St. George voting for the parish president, so do the residents of Baker, so do the residents of Central, so do the residents of Zachary. The only thing that would change that in the future is if the city parish would decide to deconsolidate. But that's not, once again, in my purview to decide.
What do you think is going to happen moving forward? It's still a murky process, but you seem full of vim and vigor.
You know, I tell people all the time that I wish there was a playbook. I wish there was a playbook for standing up the fifth largest city in the state of Louisiana. I can tell you this, is that we're excited to be part of the process. I'm excited that I was appointed to lead the transition. And we're going to take it a step at a time. And it really starts with great communication and talking with people.
And a listener says he's concerned about property values being diminished in what is now Baton Rouge. Is that a fair concern?
I don't know. I couldn't speak to that at all,
we'll
be honest with you.
We'll have to wait and see. Let's slide in Kevin in North Baton Rouge. Kevin, please be brief. You're on with Mayor Yates.
Yes, I want to know what school in the St. George area was a failing school?
What school, if any, in St. George was a failing school? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Kevin. I really couldn't speak to that.
Well, I think that the point is the schools already here were pretty good. You obviously believe they'll even be even better with new leadership. But it's a wait-and-see process, and now that it's happened, I think we all have to pull together and see where it goes and do our best to make it work. And this man, he's an impressive guy. So good luck to you, Mr. Mayor, and thanks for coming in today.
Thank you so much, Jim. Appreciate
Dustin
it.
Dustin Yates, a firefighter. I like that, too. A guy who did not go to law school or med school, but he is a man of the people and a coach, an offensive line coach. We'll be back with Ron Fauché on Talk Louisiana after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster, and you're listening to Talk Louisiana. And we're joined by one of our favorite guests, Ron Fauché, Dr. Ron Fauché, former state lawmaker, graduated from Georgetown's School of Foreign Service, holds a doctorate in law from the LSU Law Center and a PhD in political science from the University of New Orleans. He's been a pundit, a pollster, a legislator, and a man about town who is still extremely active, and he's recently done some polling for the newspaper of record, The Advocate and Picayune, about what's happening in our state. And good morning to you, Dr. Fauché.
Well, thank you, Jim. Happy to be with you.
Nice to talk with you. And let's start with the national stuff first. Today, case goes to the jury in Manhattan, and your poll shows Donald Trump's support in Louisiana has eroded just a bit, but he's still, if he's breathing, he's going to win Louisiana regardless of what happens in New York City in the next few days. But how does this play in, say, Wisconsin or Michigan or Pennsylvania or Arizona? Could it affect the election?
Well, it could. You know, in Louisiana, our poll showed Donald Trump with a 15-point lead. And worse for President Biden, he was only polling in the low 30s. So clearly Donald Trump will win the state, I think, and win it by a wide margin, as he did the last two times he ran. In terms nationally, you know, you have about a half dozen swing states that are critical to the election. Most of those states like Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, Arizona, Georgia, are states that President Trump carried when he first ran in 2016, and then those states moved to Joe Biden in 2020. Now, the polls are showing in those states that Donald Trump is leading those states again. And what's interesting is Trump is really polling better now than he ever has. He's polling better than he did in 2016 and 2020. So the question is, you know, can he hold that up? Now I don't see how a conviction helps him. I think a conviction very well could hurt him, not just because of what he would be convicted for, if he is in fact convicted. I'm not sure he will be, but if he is in fact convicted, but about what does it mean for the future? He can't pardon himself from a state offense, which is what this is. So how does he become president? How does he serve as president if he is sentenced to a prison term? And that's something that the country hasn't grappled with yet, and so we'd see what would happen. But you know, the polling has also showed that during the course of the trial, with all the testimony coming out against Trump and what have you, it really hasn't hurt him. It's had almost no effect on his ratings and his position running against Joe Biden. So it's interesting to have a criminal trial go on and a candidate not be hurt by it or offended by it. And if anything, he's probably strengthened a little bit more recently.
877-217-5757. Those words, strengthened by the fact that he's on trial and still under indictment in three other venues, although those cases are not likely to go to trial before the election, which means that President Trump, if he were reelected, would probably be home free in the courts for the next 4 years. And if he's acquitted, you can only imagine that might be very well a ticket to victory. If there's a hung jury, which is certainly a possibility, maybe a different story, but I'm sure he would frame that as total vindication. And I remember a caller, I think it was David in Atlanta many years ago, said in his estimation, Democrats did a better job governing, but Republicans do a better job of winning elections. And I thought it was brilliant what they've done the last 7 weeks, going out on the courthouse steps with many surrogates speaking on behalf of Trump, who would not take the stand, even though he said he would, and also said that he was being deprived of the opportunity, which of course was ridiculous. But all these surrogates, these jurors, they weren't sequestered. How much, if any, would they be affected by media coverage that they go home at night and see?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. But obviously, if people are living in a community, they hear people talk. They are exposed to media all over. You know, you can get media coverage on your cell phone on to just about anything, much less, you know, having to sit in front of a television set. So I would think, practically speaking, they are going to be affected by it. And you know, we have no idea what impact that has. It's really a mystery. It seems to me that that a hung jury, even though, you know, most big cases don't have hung juries, but it seems to me it's possible in this case because of the polarization for Donald Trump. I think it would be difficult, frankly, to find 12 people, all of whom could go one way or the other on Trump mm-hmm. in this particular case. And so it wouldn't surprise, no verdict would surprise me, whether it's guilty, not guilty, or if it's a hung jury. I think it's all possible.
Well, his attorney yesterday, in closing arguments, said Donald Trump never had sex with Stormy Daniels. That was echoed on this show yesterday by Speaker Mike Johnson, who said the same thing. I don't know how they would know, but they would probably say the same thing about me. But her testimony seemed rather plausible, right down to the Old Spice and Pert Plus that she found, allegedly, in his bathroom. But is this case, despite—I remember Dale Bumpers when he was defending Bill Clinton— and supposedly that was about perjury. And he said, this isn't about perjury. It's about sex. Is this really about hush money or is it about sex, Ron Fauché?
Well, you know, listening to what the reporters have said about the trial will make you believe that it is about sex and about, you know, these personal relationships, which I don't think was ever good for the prosecution, you know, because if the jury feels like it is just about sex and about somebody trying to hide it, I'm not sure they're going to convict him. If it's about him, business fraud, altering records that shouldn't have been presented that way, and then, illegally using that money to do what he did with it, it's a different story. But I do think that I think that you're right, and I just it's really what makes it difficult to predict this. You know, I've always found that that predicting trials and predicting mm-hmm. debate outcomes are two of the most difficult things in the world. You know, you probably do better betting on a football game or a horse race. What are those two?
Well, it's in New York, which is not a good venue for Donald Trump based on what happened in the E. Jean Carroll case. He's been found civilly liable for sexually assaulting a woman in a department store, and that just rolled off his back according to these polls, and this may be more of the same, and this appears to be the weakest of the four cases, although the venue is better than a couple of the others. But we shall see, and a listener has done me a favor by segueing into JFK, who, of course, as we know, had many dalliances, although I don't think he ever assaulted anybody in a department store, and to our knowledge, he was fooling around to people like Marilyn Monroe, not Stormy Daniels, and Stormy Daniels, of course, is the pride of Baton Rouge, but she does have a past of her own, shall we say, that is not so G-rated. But John Kennedy, August of 1962, Ron and I were talking about this a year and a few months before he was assassinated. He was riding all day long in an open car in New Orleans where Lee Harvey Oswald was a presence, as we know. He was born in the city and lived there right up to the assassination of Kennedy. You saw him. You were a young kid, but you saw President Kennedy, who would have been 107 years old today if he had lived. Today is his birthday, born on this date in 1917 in Brookline, Massachusetts. What do you remember about President Kennedy, Ron Fauché?
Well, I, of course, was pretty young, but I remember it just like it happened recently. And I went with my family, and we were in the crowd at City Hall, and it was a large crowd. We were pretty far back, but could see the, you know, everybody on the balcony at City Hall. And all of a sudden, everybody walked out, and there was President Kennedy. And you know, there was a glow about him that I've never seen on a human being before in my life. And I understood then, as a child, what charisma was all about. And what was particularly interesting was how red his hair was. And you know, in those days, most of the video and the photographs we would see of people were in black and white, even though, you know, you had color photography then, and you had some color television at that point, but most everything was still black and white. And so he always looked like he had, I guess, you know, brown, medium to light brown hair. But in fact, it was very reddish. And so that was a surprise. And I remember seeing that and saying, wow, you know. And then he gave a speech, a fairly short speech, but it was very good. It was powerful. And the audience cheered. And it was an exciting moment.
We'll talk a bit more about JFK and other matters, including what's happening in Louisiana, with Ron Fauché, who follows politics near and far. He's worked in Washington, lived there, and of course, New Orleans is his home. We're back after this. This is Jim Inkster, and you're listening to Talk Louisiana. We will go to the phones in short order, 877-217-5757, talking with Dr. Ron Fauché, pollster and pundit and former state lawmaker. And he's logged a couple of generations covering Louisiana and national politics. And when he was a young man, a kid in New Orleans, he saw John Fitzgerald Kennedy, the 35th American president, in New Orleans in August 19th, 1962, president. Just 15 months before his death, was in New Orleans, and he was the real deal. John Kennedy, when he died, was 46 years old. To put it in perspective, when he won in 1960, he was 43, and Richard Nixon, his opponent, was 47. Collectively, they were 90 years old. Today, we have two candidates who collectively will be 160 years old on Election Day, in Joe Biden and in Donald Trump. But President Kennedy, he was a latecomer to the civil rights movement, but he gave it the full force of his office at the end of his life. And in 1963, on the 11th day of June, unfortunately, a speech that prompted the death of Medgar Evers by Byron De La Beckwith, a noted racist and Klan member, he killed Medgar Evers less than a day after Kennedy's speech on the night of June 11th, 1963. Here was Kennedy pushing for civil rights, equal rights for minority citizens in our country.
From Washington.
President Kennedy.
This afternoon, following a series of threats and defiant statements, the presence of Alabama National Guardsmen was required on the University of Alabama to carry out the final and unequivocal order of the United States District Court of the Northern District of Alabama. That order called for the admission of two clearly qualified young Alabama residents who happened to have been born Negro. That they were admitted peacefully on the campus is due in good measure to the conduct of the students of the University of Alabama who met their responsibilities in a constructive way. I hope that every American, regardless of where he lives, will stop and examine his conscience about this and other related incidents. This nation was founded by men of many nations and backgrounds. It was founded on the principle that all men are created equal, and that the rights of every man are diminished when the rights of one man are threatened. Today we are committed to a worldwide struggle to promote and protect the rights of all who wish to be free. And when Americans are sent to Vietnam or West Berlin, we do not ask for whites only. It ought to be possible, therefore, for American students of any color to attend any public institution they select.
John Kennedy, June 11, 1963. He was something, wasn't he, Dr. Fauché?
Well, he was. And, you know, what's interesting about that clip you just played is that he wasn't speaking to one portion of the American electorate. He wasn't speaking just to his supporters. He was talking to the whole country. And what he said as president, he took very seriously, which was the same with other presidents at that time and before him. And the contrast between that and now is very, very different. And because every speech now sounds like and feels like a political speech. But in those days, presidents actually had things to say to the American people that wasn't just about politics. In fact, his stand on civil rights, even though he was very cautious and was slow to move on it, but ultimately he did. And his stand on civil rights was potentially very harmful to his politics because he won the election with a strong vote from the South. And so you know, that's the kind of leadership that we're just not seeing that much of these days. And and I think a lot of Americans, particularly younger Americans, have missed out on getting a sense of presidential leadership that's about the country, that's about unifying the country to do difficult things. And not just about playing politics and targeting one group or, you know, pitting one group against another group.
Well, before we go to the phones, Governor Landry, to his credit, for some of us, many of us, he insisted on a second majority black district, and lawmakers complied, and it survived a court challenge, and that's what we have. And so come November, we will have two majority African-American congressional districts. And it puts Garrett Graves in a tight spot. Speaker Johnson was with us yesterday. He wants Graves to run against Cleo Fields. Graves is making up his mind whether to do that or oppose Julia Letlow. But here was Speaker Johnson.
No, not at all. And I have encouraged Garrett to think hard about running in that newly drawn district, even though it's different. And some of the prognosticators have suggested it's, you know, that it leans for the Democrats. I don't think that's a foregone conclusion. I think Garrett is a very strong candidate. I mean, he's delivered real tangible results for the state and for that region. I wouldn't bet against him. And I think that, you know, President Trump won Louisiana by record margins in 2016 and 2020. He'll be at the top of the ticket, of course, in November. And his support is growing. I think this is a coattails election situation across the country, certainly in Louisiana. I think turnout will be very strong because enthusiasm for the Republican side is strong, whereas it is not for Joe Biden and his team. I think it bodes very well. I think Garrett could win it, and I'm really hopeful he'll run in that district.
What do you think? Can a white Republican win in a majority black district in Louisiana, Ron?
Well, I think it's possible, depending upon election day turnout. I think that Speaker Johnson makes a good case there, even though I'm not sure that's the way it would turn out. But I think it's possible. With Donald Trump on the ballot, you're going to have, I think, a strong turnout of Republican voters and conservative voters and MAGA voters around the state. And that would be a big help if Garrett ran for Congress again from this district. And so I think it's possible that he could win it. It would be very difficult. Let's not kid ourselves. And I could understand why Speaker Johnson would like to see him do it, because he doesn't want to see Garrett run against Julia Letlow, who is another conservative Republican. And so you're going to lose one of those two Republicans if he would run, whether he would win or not. But running against a Democrat in the current district gives the Republicans a chance to hold on to a seat that they would otherwise lose. So it certainly makes sense for the Republican Party that he runs for that and he wins that election. Whether he can do it or not, I think it's possible, but I think it's difficult.
David in Atlanta. David, you're on Talk Louisiana with Ron Fauché.
Good morning, gentlemen. Great program. Mr. Fauché, Donald Trump is in the process of shaking down oil executives for a $1 billion campaign donation. In return, he will rescind all of the climate change regulations President Biden has put into effect. Ron DeSantis thinks climate change is woke. Now, Louisiana, according to the administration that monitors the weather, Lake Pontchartrain has risen 6 inches since 2010 and continuing to rise. Another Katrina would be catastrophic.
All right. What about the existential threat we're having and how climate change plays a role and how lawmakers are oblivious to it, even in our own backyard, Ron Fauché? Thank you, David.
Well, I think, it's something that Louisiana as a state has not grappled with, and it needs to. There is so much politics around climate change right now. It makes it very difficult to talk about the issue in the kind of dispassionate, objective way that it needs to be discussed. And that's very unfortunate. There is evidence that there is climate change. When you get into the cause of climate change, is it due to what people are doing and what has happened in society over the years? That's up to debate. But clearly there is something going on here. In a state like Louisiana that's so exposed to climate changes and so exposed to serious climate problems, needs to take note of this. Now, there's limitations in what any individual state can do compared to what the whole country can do, compared to what the whole world has to do. And that always limits what can be done. But I do think it's a real issue for the state of Louisiana, given our position in our territory and how we have so much water and wetlands and are surrounded by all this, and it keeps, the land keeps shrinking and the water keeps growing.
All right. Gretchen has been waiting. Gretchen, we only have a few seconds, but I want to get you in. I know you've been waiting a while. Go for it.
Thank you so much. I tell you, I hope our beloved country wakes up, because we have a president now that we can be proud of. We have a president who had experience in government, reads and knows history, respect for the truth.
All right. Well, Gretchen, it's going to be a close one. I think, Ron, we all agree on that, and it comes down to those swing states. And unfortunately, Biden and Trump won't be spending a lot of quality time in Louisiana, but the next 22 weeks will be interesting, shall we say. Thank you, Ron Fauché. Always a delight. And stay safe and stay tuned.